This is the Women's Protection and Empowerment Podcast, where we give space to talking about women and girls in humanitarian settings. At International Rescue Committee, we deliver innovative programs focused on preventing and responding to violence against women and girls. We are in pursuit of a world where women and girls live free from violence as valued and respected members of their community. This movement is about equitable access to opportunities.
Empowering women and girls means a lot for development of the next generation, and it's important for the development of a country.
It's about catalysts for change.
Women and girls are not just the faces of poverty. They're also the key to overcoming.
It's about voice and respect.
The path to victory is still long, and I'm not ready to give up. This has become to me more than a work, but a passion to see women and the girls start gaining what has been for long denied to them.
From IRC, this is the WPE Podcast. I'm Christy Crabtree.
According to the GSMA, by the end of 2022, a whopping 4.6 billion people, or 57% of the entire world's population, were using mobile internet. Almost everyone on Earth, 95% of people, now have access to a mobile broadband network. Because of this, advances in technology and spurred on by necessity during COVID, technology has progressively been a larger and larger influential factor in our work. But, and there is a but, what's underneath these statistics? We know there's a gender digital divide, but what does that mean in humanitarian settings? And more importantly, what can we do about it? Today, we have two guests to help us answer this question. My name is Megan O'Brien, and I'm today's episode's host. I'm the Case Management Data Specialist with the IRC's Violence Prevention and Response Unit, and I'm excited to welcome Rana and Christy.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for having us. I'm Christy Crabtree, the Senior Advisor for Digital Innovation in the Violence Prevention and Response Unit.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for this opportunity to make this podcast. I am Rana, the GBV IMS officer from WBE department in Yemen, the officer that was responsible about the digital literacy program in Yemen.
Thank you both so much for being here. I'm so excited to have a chance to talk to you about this digital literacy project. I mentioned in the introduction the gender digital divide. Can you help listeners understand this a bit more? What do we know about the gender digital divide in humanitarian settings?
I think it's important to note that there is a lot of research about the gender digital divide in low and middle income countries, but it's under-researched when we're talking about humanitarian settings, where we know a number of factors for individuals and families become a lot more difficult. So we conducted some research in 2017 in Lebanon, in 2019 in Uganda, and then we did some proxy surveying during COVID to better understand the digital gender gap in humanitarian settings. What we found from doing these gender and age disaggregated surveys was that there was a really surprising consistency across the countries where we looked at the digital gender gap. We really expected a much bigger difference between countries in what the digital gender gap looked like in that country and what were the specific barriers for women and girls. And what we found across the board was that these really fell into, I'll roughly say, four categories. The first one was prohibitive costs. So the number one barrier reported was the affordability or lack of affordability of mobile devices and data or internet access. The second one was public space restrictions. And what we're talking about here is women and girls are often restricted from public spaces that are largely inhabited by men. So think about school, work, markets, other public gathering places where men and boys might have greater opportunities for more organic learning about how to use phones, how to use other internet-enabled devices, and have better access to the internet. So this in turn weakens women and girls' natural exposure to mobile technology and the internet, which then has an effect on the next barrier we found, which was a lack of technical competence. So limited access to internet-enabled devices means that women and girls lack technical confidence in using them, which then, of course, impacts desire for access, and that's also weakened. What's underlying all of this, and the fourth category, and the one that I would highlight if this wasn't an audio podcast, was negative attitudes towards women and girls' use of phones and the internet. And this is something that really affects their ability to build digital literacy organically, safely, and without intervention. Male figures in the households and communities are really quick to assert the hazards for women, many of which are related to the potential for starting up or maintaining romantic relationships where male family members deemed that unacceptable. And if we're looking at all of these obstacles, the barrier of social disapproval, or sometimes we call it harmful social norms, is really unique to the experience of women and girls. And that was one that was a specific, very gendered barrier that restricts their access, their confidence, and ultimately their desire to use information or communications technology. And beyond their household, the threat of generalized harassment from other community members adds another layer of fear on top of this. So that's what we kind of looked at in Lebanon, Uganda, and then in our proxy surveying that covered a number of countries during COVID. Maybe Rana, you can speak to more of what you've seen in Yemen when it comes to the digital gender gap.
For the gender digital divide in Yemen, it poses multiple challenges for women and girls, especially in the conflict-affected areas. After the war, the women and girls faces limited access to internet and technology due to traditions and cultural barriers, then economic constraints because they can't afford to buy mobiles or the fees of the internet, and also the infrastructure issues because some places or areas, they don't have the internet access because they are not big cities, it's just small villages. About the women and girls, even in education, health, or digital world, they can't take the decision for this because the decision maker is the man, whatever he is, the father or brother or maybe the husband. So the lack of access to this internet make the woman and girls feel stigma because they still afraid from enter the internet or using the mobile because they have the idea the mobile will make for them many troubles because they can't deal with this technology. So in Yemen, the man have the authority or the power to access the internet and technology more than the woman.
So consistently across countries, including Yemen, we're seeing women and girls face barriers and obstacles to accessing technology, including costs, public space restrictions that prevent organic learning and exposure, a lack of technical confidence, weakened desires, and negative attitudes and social norms towards women and girls using digital technology, which is resulting in fears and challenges, especially in conflict-affected areas. So what can we do about this?
I mean, I think the answer to this is a really complicated one, which is why we see this gap persist despite those really powerful statistics you shared at the start of this podcast about the footprint of mobile broadband networks covering most of the world. What we're seeing, though, is this is a very difficult problem to unravel. I think the issue now and why this is coming, it's not like it hasn't been at the forefront, but we're talking about it a lot more, is that we're promoting technology as a tool to alleviate poverty, address health issues, advance towards gender equality in places where there are significant and documented barriers to that technology for women and girls. So the digital gender gap really reflects existing gender inequities and then compounds them. In my opinion, accessible and inclusive technology is the only way to roll out these digital tools in a way that can really be scalable and massively helpful. If we're not going to reach the right people, then we're replicating existing power dynamics, which means with this work, we're making it harder to achieve gender equality. when we look at this from our research, we know about the blockages. So in terms of digital inclusion, closing this digital gender gap, we really need to address all of these: cost, confidence, access to devices in the internet, safe spaces online, social disapproval, the list goes on. I would roughly put these into three categories just for us to carry this conversation forward. One is around advancing equitable access and use. The second one is making online spaces safe and inclusive. And the third one is promoting an enabling environment. So just to dig in on each of those to give a few examples, when we're talking about advancing equitable access and use, we're looking at handset affordability. Are there financing pathways to lower the cost of devices? We're looking at a lack of clarity on data costs. So how can we make sure it's clear how much data is someone going to use when they do something online? Or how can we make data light apps or online services for women and girls? We need to look at design for digital products and services with women and girls to really make sure that these are inclusive. And then look at gaps in digital literacy, which again has an impact on desire to use phones. What are ways to provide this training from trusted points in local communities? How can we accommodate for low or no literacy in non-dominant languages, where a number of tech tools are designed around dominant languages? How can we partner with mobile operators? In that second category, where we're looking at online safe spaces that are inclusive, how can we produce guidance for practitioners on how to respond to technology-facilitated gender-based violence? How can we track technology-facilitated gender-based violence in order to do more advocacy around this? And then how can we promote guidance on how to stay safe online? This is connected again to digital literacy, but also is a huge issue for human rights defenders that are women or female politicians. Content and services need to be available in local languages. So what other ways could we utilize IVR or simple terminology or pictures or comic style stories to accommodate more users? And then this final basket around promoting an enabling environment. We're looking here beyond the individual in the setting where they are. What is their context? So looking at ways that we can address this social disapproval or these harmful social norms through behavior change communication. How can we make mobile operators more inclusive for women and girls? So can there be female mobile operators? Can the hours be convenient for women? And looking at ways that government regulations can address this, perhaps taxes on devices could affect affordability, ID requirements, which may be controlled by males in the household, making more public services available online to really demonstrate the value and relevance of the internet to women and their families, and then mainstreaming mobile and digital skills in school curricula. And then finally, going back to technology-facilitated gender-based violence, having laws or redress to combat this, mechanisms to monitor this, investigate, prosecute reports of online abuse. All of these things are intertwined if we look at a digital inclusion theory of change. And I think for me, the kicker is that this is a leverage issue. If we want women and girls to have more agency, more control, to realize their full potential, we have to address the multitude of barriers they face, one of which is technology. And this is a gatekeeper in a lot of ways to addressing, again, those health, livelihood, equity issues. We can't make great advances, for example, in economic empowerment and leave technology out of that equation. Technology means access to information, communication, building and strengthening social networks that can help sustain women and girls, their families, their communities through these shocks that we see in humanitarian settings. And it's also about advocacy, agency, and power. So we're talking today about digital literacy being one part of this very big web of levers that we need to push and pull in order to have real digital inclusion.
Okay, let's talk more about that last point that you made. So digital literacy is a part of this bigger picture that needs to change in order to achieve digital inclusion. And this is something that's actually being addressed in IRC programs. Can you talk a little bit more about what's happening with that?
We started doing this research pre-COVID, having no idea how the world was going to change as a result of COVID. And we were just starting to see more and more technology in our programs and also seeing women and girls not accessing those at the same rates as men and boys. But then in 2020, because of the rapid shift of everything into virtual services, we started to shift from research into a digital literacy curriculum. And so we really looked at what do we know and how can we use that to make a digital literacy curriculum that's specifically designed for women and girls in humanitarian settings. And so what we found is that we really needed to make something that was gender sensitive, that took into account all of those barriers, and then was also safety prioritizing, because anything that we do in the humanitarian space, we don't want to create additional harm. And so we had the idea that if we created this curriculum that was gender sensitive and safety prioritizing, if we loaned out mobile devices and provided access to the internet, along with this digital skills training, there would be improvements in the equitable uptake of technology. So we developed this curriculum. It has a number of modules. And I'll say off the bat, we very much consider this curriculum to be something that is going to evolve over time as technology evolves. But right now, what we have in this is an introduction to digital spaces. What are digital accounts and apps? Finding information online, staying safe online, social media, and then digital employment and education skills. To eliminate these barriers around access, we designed this curriculum to be implemented in women and girls' safe spaces. And this is a really important part. And if you take one thing away from this podcast today, well, I'd like you to take a number of things, but the connection of this curriculum and it being held in a safe space is something that's really essential. For those that don't know, women and girls' safe spaces are physical spaces for women and girls only, where they can gain knowledge and skills, access gender-based violence response services or other services, and really just have opportunities for support and collective action in their community. So this is really a combination of a safety prioritizing curriculum and it being hosted at the women and girls safe spaces that really helps us address digital inclusion in a really meaningful way. So once we had this curriculum in 2023 through 2024, our program in Yemen piloted this with 50 adult women. The women were registered for the digital literacy course through outreach efforts by our staff. So that's where we're at now. We can talk a little bit more about how that process went.
So we now have this gender-sensitive, safety-prioritizing digital literacy curriculum that we expect to evolve over time. And excitingly, you've just completed a pilot of this in Yemen in a women and girls safe space there. So Rana, how did this go?
Sure, Megan. Firstly, everyone in WE department in Abyan was nervous because it's just a new program and the trainers don't have the enough knowledge to carry out for the training session. So there were training sessions for the trainers or the facilitators that took 4 days, and each day carry out some models. So after that, we start the selection process for the trainees. We said that the age is from 28 to 35, and the number of the trainees was just 50. Through the selection process, everyone from the society was afraid of the program and what the women and girls will learn from this program and would this program have positive impact or negative impacts. They also have the idea that the digital literacy program is more about phone maintenance than digital knowledge, and this makes the trainees confused about the content of the digital literacy program. After that, the process of the selection includes 3 main steps. The application, where the applicants visit the center to register their personal details like the name and the ID information. After that, the officers in Abyan reviewed all the applications and eliminate who didn't meet the requirements for the program. Also, we have the pretest for the trainees, and I was responsible to revise the pretest questions. Also, the officers in Abyan administrated the pretest, and the result was reviewed by me to select the final 50 participants. Overall, the selection process was designed to identify the participants that suited for the digital literacy program based on their age and pretest marks. And there were 58 sessions held through the program from August 2023 to February 2024. And these sessions covered many topics.
Rana mentioned we had a pre and post knowledge assessment for the participants in the digital literacy program. What we found was that there was an almost fourfold increase in digital literacy knowledge among the participants. And this really underscores the effectiveness of the curriculum and the positive impact of hosting this type of curriculum in a women and girls safe space as a model for improving women's digital literacy skills.
So as we all know, we can rarely predict how a program is actually going to work out. Was there anything surprising about the pilot that you found in your implementation?
I just noticed that the program firstly enabled the women and girls to raise their confidence and to become more strong while they search on the internet or install some apps or going through the social media. Also, the impact is not just on the participants, it's also going through to cover their families, because some of the participants help their daughters, their mothers to have enough knowledge while they search on internet or use their phones. And some girls and women just convince their men in the house, just like father, brother, husband, about the importance of the knowledge of digital literacy world and how this knowledge will help them to be stronger, have more confidence to face any challenges or threats that going through internet. They have the power to go and talk with their parents, brothers, without no fear, because they knew they used the internet and the phones in the good way. The digital literacy program enabled the participant to make their own project after the program is finished, because some of the women and girls opened their own projects, like creating CVs, cover letters. Some of them held some sessions in colleges and some schools to make the girls and even the boys more aware about the digital literacy and how this will be helpful for society if they knew the positive impact of the internet and phones. And some of them open design projects, just like themes and cards, and also invitation cards for weddings and anything else. And some of them just make a session about bullying and how this have a negative impact on the boys and girls. We have to stop this bullying. This program make the women and girls do any project for themselves to raise their livelihood situation and don't need the men to help them. By making the women and girls more stronger and have the confidence and aware about the digital world, this gave them the confidence when they talked with father, brother, or husband, and how to deal with phones without waiting for the men to let them or show them how to use this. This program is really beneficial for them, and many women and girls still coming to the center in Abyan asking for this program again, so women and girls can have the same benefit as the previous participant.
I think if I can add too, I think one of the things, just to give a shout out to Rana and the team in Yemen, we went into this with a hypothesis that digital literacy skills would be improved. And what we saw was a lot more than that. And that's why I've talked earlier about this being a leverage opportunity, because we saw participants gained access to new information and resources, like the resume writing tools, job platforms, online learning programs, that was above and beyond just how to use a phone and how to navigate it, how to find information online. There were these feelings reported of confidence and self-reliance that were much more significant than I think what we assumed. And then the conversations that the participants had in their homes and how that impacted gender barriers in their home, but also had impacts on things like economic potential of participants. So we saw a lot of spontaneous livelihood opportunities come up as a result of this, which to me personally, that was the most surprising part of this, is for the women that participated to get access to this information, increase their skills, and then say, okay, what am I going to do now with this? And they did a lot. A lot of them went on to look at ways that they could use this to increase their economic potential. So that was really surprising. And I think is one of the really exciting things about focusing on digital inclusion and the possibility of digital inclusion to be a starting point and to really thoughtfully connect it up to other services as well. So we've done this in the Women and Girls Safe Space as a standalone, but I think it has huge potential to be connected up to livelihoods programs or a number of other sectors. It could be health, could be access to information services. There are just so many opportunities that came out of this.
Surprises aren't always positive, but it sounds like this project was really successful in that the community really enjoyed the program. Girls found empowerment, strength, confidence, and economic opportunities through the digital literacy curriculum. And it also sounds like there was kind of a ripple effect across families and communities, both through participants sharing their knowledge outside of the session to empower other women and girls, but also because it started to adjust social norms that bolster gender inequality. These are incredible, unexpected results. And I'm wondering if there's anything else you learned that you want to share.
This is a pilot, so there's obviously a ton that we've learned from this. And there are already a number of countries in IRC that want to take this forward. I think there's a few takeaways from this that I would share with anyone else who's thinking about doing, you know, utilizing this curriculum or another digital literacy curriculum. The first one is that hosting this in the Women and Girls Safe Space was really essential to creating a holistic and empowering learning environment for women and girls. We have a learning brief that's going to be on GBV responders that talks more about this. And we have a couple of stories from the participants that are really powerful in speaking about what else comes from it being in this environment, which is really amazing. And I encourage people to check that out. The second one, again, to the point I made earlier, is connecting participants to small business or livelihood training opportunities. That was a huge opportunity. I had no idea that this would come out as a result. I wish that I knew and that we could connect them up to that, because I feel like that feels very organic in the flow of what comes next after this. The next one, I also wish that we would have developed a monitoring tool to assess the impact of the training on feelings of empowerment. So we really looked at knowledge increase, but we didn't look at a before and after of feelings of empowerment. And I wish that we would have done that. We will do that for trainings going forward so we can really track that. That was also a bit of a surprise. So we have a lot of anecdotal information from participants about their increase in feelings of empowerment, but we didn't measure it in a way that I wish we could have. And I think that digital literacy can contribute a lot to that. Another thing that has been on our list to include in the curriculum and didn't really come out of the pilot, but I think is needed if we look at the environment generally and how digital spaces are changing, is that we need to have additional training on media literacy. And I think this is a responsibility of anyone who is doing digital literacy right now, is to really look at how can we help people think critically about what they're doing online and what information they're absorbing online. We know that there are growing potentials for mis, dis, and malinformation. So how can we really set people up for success with that? In the curriculum now, we have a light coverage of this, but I would really like to go more in depth on media literacy. And then the last one is really speaking to that broader community level change. I would love to explore the benefits of combining or sequencing digital literacy training with targeted social and behavior change communication campaigns around digital use of internet-enabled devices for women and girls. There is a lot of potential, we saw even in this pilot, for people to have these conversations in their household and for that to reduce gender barriers and increase access to devices. But think about what we could do if we looked at this on a community level. There's a lot of change that we could make, both for people that are participating in digital literacy, but also those that aren't. When a community as a general is changing their norms around what is acceptable, that's going to increase women and girls' access, potentially in those public spaces, or just make it a more quote unquote acceptable activity for women and girls in their households. There's been some positive examples of this. There was a program called Tech for Families that Equal Access Initiative did in Nigeria, I believe. I would love for that to be a model that we look at in more and more settings.
I have a feeling that anyone listening to this podcast is going to be really excited to learn more about the curriculum, about where they can find these things, what they can do in their settings. So can you help us understand where to go and what to do to learn more?
For us, this is really just the start of this. And this is not something that we want to gatekeep at all within IRC. So the curriculum is available in English, Spanish, French, Arabic, and Burmese on the GBV Responders site. So that's gbvresponders.org. If you go to empowerment, there's a link there for safety and empowerment in digital spaces, and you'll find the curriculum on there. You'll also find our operationalization guidance that's available in English right now. I should say all of this has been done on a shoestring budget. We believe this to be so massively important and such a leverage point for so many other services. If this is something that anybody wants to contribute to, we are looking for funding for translation and just to get the message out there about this curriculum further. We have it on the site right now under a Creative Commons license because we want other people to use it. Don't want this to be something that's just contained in a one-off women and girls safe space in one setting. We want this to be really out there and women and girls everywhere to be accessing this. We also have an e-learning tool coming out soon. We've developed this in partnership with UNICEF, and this will be hosted on their virtual safe space site, laha.org, laaha.org, and it will also be linked on the GBV Responders site. This is a growing product. We'll have our curriculum, the operationalization guidance, a link to the e-learning, a link to our learning brief, all on the website.
For our article in the forced migration, it's in the process of review and it will be launched in May 2024. And this article, it will be good so the world can have the knowledge of how this program is important for the society in Yemen and for all the world, because not just in Yemen, they faced more challenges in access internet or uses the digital devices. More countries have the same challenges for the women, and if more digital literacy programs held, it will make the gap in the world decreases, not only in Yemen.
For those of you listening, there have been a lot of great insights to take away from our conversation with Rana and Christy. When it comes to the gender digital divide, we can't make assumptions about access. We need to assess, survey, and have conversations with the people we're designing digital tools for before we launch those digital tools. We really need to be active about inclusion. This is also true if we want to successfully implement the digital literacy curriculum. Besides accessing it on GBV responders and being sure to implement the program in a women and girls safe space, we need to be thoughtful about the context, needs, and wants of the women and girls and their inclusion before we actually launch it. We also heard a lot of really important lessons from the digital literacy pilot in Yemen, especially the fact that digital literacy is a leveraged service. So digital literacy doesn't stop at knowing how to use a mobile device. It expands so much further. It can help women and girls find even more power, strength, and confidence in themselves. And it can also offer connection to information services and maybe even livelihood opportunities. So as we discussed, you can find the curriculum as well as guidance on how to implement it on gbvresponders.org. Thank you so much, Rana and Christy, for joining us today and for sharing your knowledge and experiences. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Safety, voice, respect. Join the WPE movement.